The following audio file was recorded on April 8th in Nashville, Tennessee by Earnhardt Productions Incorporated at a voting rights and election reform conference titled Gathering to Save Our Democracy. It has been uploaded to the site courtesy of the January 30th Coalition, an Ohio-based voting rights group which endorsed the conference. You are welcome to copy and distribute or broadcast this recording. Please also consider making a donation to Radio for All so that recordings like this one can continue to be made available.
Thank you very much. I'd like to, first of all, thank Bernie and everyone else who put this conference together. I'm Warren Stewart, and I serve as Director of Legislative Issues for National Ballot Integrity Project and Vote Trust USA. These nonprofit, nonpartisan organizations dedicated to ensuring voting accessibility for all voters, public accountability and oversight of all aspects of election systems, public awareness of election reform issues, accurate recording, counting, and reporting of all votes cast, and adoption and enforcement of election procedures, laws, and regulations that ensure that everyone who wants to vote is able to do so without hindrance and with full confidence that their vote will be counted as cast. I've been asked to talk this evening about New Mexico and what happened in the election last November, and also about the recount effort and litigation that ensued. The experiences in New Mexico since November 2nd highlight many of the concerns expressed today, the fallibility of electronic voting machines and the urgent need for a verification mechanism based on paper and automatic audits, the inadequacy of recount provisions in state laws, and the lengths to which elected officials will go to circumvent them, the degree to which elections in this country have become privatized and placed in the hands of voting machine manufacturers and third-party vendors, and the power of focused citizens' action to force meaningful change. Elections belong to the citizens, to us, and we entrust the facilitation of those elections to government officials. But they're ours still, and we need to be vigilant in our supervision of how the elections are run, and we need to pay attention. On November 23rd, the Canvassing Board of New Mexico certified the results of the November 2nd election as documented in the state's Canvass report. It's available conveniently on the Secretary of State's website. This Canvass report is an impressively large book, or a virtual book on the website, I guess, that contains all the vote totals reported by every precinct in the state. It's like a massive box score of the election. And it is intended to be an accurate account of the will of the people of New Mexico as expressed in the general election. It serves as the basis for determining the slate of electors that select the president, as well as who will serve in Congress and in fiscal in local offices, whether certain bond measures and constitutional amendments are passed, and so forth. On November 29th, Green Party presidential candidate David Cobb and Libertarian candidate Michael Badnarik jointly filed official requests for a recount and deposited the required $108,000 required by state code. Their demand for a recount stemmed from widespread concerns over the state's dubious distinction of once again leading the nation in undervote rate. It was also based on the high number of election incident reports and the razor-thin margin of victory, less than 6,000 votes. By the middle of December, the Green Party, together with Help America Recount, had organized over 1,000 volunteers to act as observers and coordinators for the recount. On Wednesday, December 15th, the State Canvassing Board met and granted the recount request. However, according to state election officials, recount proponents would also have to come up with $1.4 million, and they would have to come up with $1.4 million by 10 a.m. the next day in order to proceed with the recount. Recount proponents went to court, of course, to have the $1.4 million charge dropped. On December 17th, a New Mexico court reaffirmed the decision of the Canvassing Board to allow a recount of the state's presidential ballots but only if the advocates paid the $1.4 million to cover the recount costs. On December 23rd, the New Mexico Supreme Court upheld the canvassing board's $1.4 million demand, including the Supreme Court Justice who had been elected on that in November, had been re-elected in November. That decision was contrary to New Mexico law because there is neither legal requirement that campaigns pay the full cost in advance nor any way to accurately estimate the cost of the recount before it's completed. Ironically, the governor has recently signed a bill that passed through the state legislature that in fact now makes it state law that anyone who is demanding a recount has to pay the full cost, which would seem to suggest that previously that was not the case. Well, whatever. It is the land of enchantment. Inspired by Richard Hayes Phillips, I set out to, since no one else seemed to be counting, making sure that every vote was counted, I decided that I would actually make an effort to do so, and together with Ellen Tyson of votersunite.org, I undertook a detailed analysis of the Canvas report, and the results of our analysis, as presented in a report completed in January, cast serious doubts on the accuracy of the certified results. Our analysis found 2,087 phantom votes for president in the state of New Mexico, situations in which the number of ballots cast was less than the number of presidential votes counted. Including the down-ticket races, we found over 13,000 more phantom votes in the Canvas report, including one precinct in San Juan County, where 1,863 phantom votes were recorded for the incumbent county clerk. That was a joke. I was supposed to get a laugh on that one. Our analysis showed that one in every 37 ballots cast, 21,084 statewide, did not record a vote for president. On election day, the rate was 1 in 20, with 92 precincts reporting undervote rates over 10%. That means 1 in 10 people who got off the couch and stood in line weren't concerned about who was the next president, according to the Canvas report. Our analysis also showed that although only 40% of the state's voters cast their ballots on push-button electronic voting machines, the kind without the paper record, these machines accounted for 77% of the presidential undervotes. Further, in precincts that used optical scan ballots for early voting and push-button electronic voting machines on election day, the undervote rate on election day was almost six times higher. By comparing undervote rates in presidential to down-ticket contests, our analysis strongly suggests that most of the 21,084 presidential undervotes did not reflect unconcerned voters intentionally casting none of the above candidate votes, but rather that voting machines may have lost entire ballots. The Secretary of State of New Mexico has commented that they don't spend a lot of time on undervote issues, assuming that those voters aren't concerned about who is the next president. That is a quote. You can blame the voters, or you can blame the machines. The Secretary of State has blamed the voters. I blame the machines. Without a meaningful recount and without a voter verifiable paper record, there is no way to know which one of us is right. We were able to do the analysis we did because of the extraordinarily helpful staff at the Bureau of Elections in Santa Fe. That wasn't a joke, actually. I have to say, the people working in the office of the Bureau of Elections in Santa Fe were fabulous. They had lived through the experience from the election day to the date of certification, and I think they knew what a mess it was, and they were quite happy to get the information, get the word out there. I think they're thinking, if people realize what a mess it was, that they'll get more staff people the next time around, which would be a good idea. And so shortly after the certification, they provided me with an Access database file titled General 04, which was said to contain all the data on which the certified Canvas report was based. And in fact, the numbers in General 04 do indeed correspond precisely with the numbers in the PDF files on the Secretary of State's website. This data served as the source for NM State Data 4.2, on which all our research has been based and which you can get on the votersunite.org website. On several occasions in December, I requested a breakdown of the provisional ballot data. Since provisional ballots were new in New Mexico for the 2004 election, there was no requirement that they be broken out specifically in the canvas report. And since provisional ballots were cast on election day, they were simply folded into the election day totals. That was the one area where we couldn't absolutely identify every vote and every non-vote to a specific machine type. I called the Bureau of Elections, and they agreed that they would happily provide me with those provisional ballot totals. But I was told that in order to get those totals, they would have to request the information from the vendor. I was a bit surprised, but anyway, the vendor seems to be a certain Automated Election Services, formerly known as Ink Impressions, a Rio Rancho-based firm that served as a data interface, I was told. Anyway, sure enough, in January, in fact, it was on Boxer Day, in fact, it was January 6th that I got a phone call that indeed they did have the information for me, and they provided me another access file that was mysteriously called Seawolf Canvas Data, and it was dated January 4th, and the Bureau of Elections staff assured me that this was the same database on which the Canvas report was based. This file did indeed contain presidential votes separated into early voting absentee election night, provisional ballots, and overseas ballots. And I also received a separate file that had the signature roster on it as well for the number of ballots cast. And that was also from the same database, I was told. So I thought it was going to be easy. I'd just take the provisional ballot totals out, and then I'd know what was cast on what machine. However, when comparing the data in our original database to Seawolf, I found serious discrepancies in all of the totals, especially in two counties. The totals at the top, the number of votes for Kerry and the number of votes for Bush, didn't change very much, but a lot of the phantom votes disappeared. Oddly enough, a lot of other phantom votes did appear, and it was the same mess as before. Basically, it sort of cast in doubt not only the new data I was given, but the old data. I became curious about Automated Election Services and noted the degree of their involvement in the election process in New Mexico. And they seem to serve as a sort of one-stop shopping center for elections. They sell the machines, they program the machines, they service the machines, print the ballots, count the ballots, assemble the data, and apparently change the data. In talking to county clerks, we found that in the course of a conversation, they often use Secretary of State's office and Automated Election Services interchangeably. Have elections in the state been privatized to the extent that the Bureau of Elections has to call a third-party vendor to access election data? Are the people of New Mexico aware of the extent to which the election process is run by a private company with no government oversight? It was about the same time that I was asking myself these questions when I read that the Secretary of State had announced the appointment of a new director of Bureau of Elections, and perhaps it's only a coincidence that his last place of employment for the last 6 years was Automated Election Services. The Canvas report of the New Mexico election is a mess. It's messier than my checkbook, and that's not a good thing. It's my decision to take the risk of bouncing an election, and I have to live with the consequences. If state election officials allow this level of inaccuracy, they are running the risk of bouncing an election, and we all have to live with the consequences. Having raised legitimate concerns about the accuracy of the New Mexico election and having fulfilled the requirements for requesting a recount, the Greens and Libertarians were met by fierce resistance from the governor, the Secretary of State, and the state courts. And I have to point out here that there wasn't a Republican in sight. We've got a governor who was on the short list to be Kerry's vice president. We have a Democratic Secretary of State, Democratic state legislature. So I just want to insist that this is not a Democratic issue. This is an issue of democracy we're talking about here, and everyone wants their votes counted. Though the recount is still pending in court, the electors have already cast their vote, but there is still cause for optimism going forward. Responding to tremendous pressure from citizen activist organizations like United Voters of New Mexico and Verified Voting New Mexico, The governor of New Mexico just this week signed a bill requiring a paper record in all New Mexico elections. I'm optimistic that through... Yeah, right on. Those people really were amazing. They were like at the State House every day, all day long. They were in the faces of the legislators all the time. I'm just about done. Anyway, I'm optimistic that through relentless citizen activism, outreach and education, together with effective advocacy and lobbying efforts at both the state and federal level, we as a community can build legislated safeguards that will help restore confidence in the election process. Everyone wants their votes counted accurately. Democrats, Republicans, the Green Party, the Constitution Party want their votes counted. Progressives and conservatives, farmers, office workers, steel workers, college students, the NAACP, the Christian Coalition wants their votes counted accurately. Accuracy, integrity, and fairness are nonpartisan values. They are values worth fighting for. Thank you for the opportunity of speaking with you this evening. Stay free.
Hi, I'm Judy Alter. Instead of going to Ohio, I went in December and spent a week in Santa Fe as a recount volunteer for the Green and Libertarian parties. As you know, the recount didn't occur. Jeremiah Aiken, a hero of ours from Riverside, California, conducted two training sessions where I learned how to audit electronic voting machines. Because of a public records request by Bev Harris, Jeremiah had the absentee ballot reports. I've given you samples in the handout of all three. Absentee ballot reports, the internal memory tapes, and some cartridge memory tapes for almost all the 220 Sequoia Advantage push-button voting machines for the 86 precincts in Santa Fe County. I'm giving you election night data. He also obtained the uncut rolls of tallies from the five early voting locations. For absentee and early voting, voters filled out OptiScan cards by hand. I did a machine-by-machine, precinct-by-precinct study of these three sources of data. The detailed patterns I found in Santa Fe County reflect much of what happened in New Mexico and other states using the straight party option, which is what I'm working to talk to you about. The basic facts I've given you in the handout. The people in Santa Fe County are strongly Democratic. Their overall turnout of registered voters was 74%. On election day, 71% voted Democratic, perhaps 31% voted Republican. Wait, I'll tell you more. 1% voted for other parties. About a third of that group voted absentee, a little over one third voted early voting, and 37% voted on election day. This fairly even division into three groups helps compare the voting patterns on the hand-filled out ballots with the patterns on the electronic machines. So it's really helpful. I found two distinct patterns, especially on election day, but also in the early voting. The first pattern, where statewide Democratic candidates received more votes than Kerry, occurred in many states. I compared Kerry's totals to the down ticket, and you now know what that means, any of the statewide candidates below the president, this jargon, down ticket, including Tom Udall, congressman, and two statewide judges. On election day, the three down-ticket Democrats, with their tallies averaged, garnered 6% more votes than Kerry. But in the absentee voting totals, which reflect the voter registration patterns fairly accurately, Kerry's 77% was 2% more than the down-ticket Democrats. In early voting, Kerry earned 70% of the vote compared to the down-ticket's 73 Democrats. The three-point difference is not unusual, but beyond 3 points, statisticians become suspicious. In the three voting opportunities, the totals of the average down-ticket Democrats remain pretty consistent. This is all very important. Kerry's totals, however, drop from 77% in absentee totals to 63% on Election Day, a 14% drop. And the undervote on Election Day is 20 times higher than the absentee and early voting. The second pattern really stood out. Bush got many more votes than the down-ticket Republicans. I think they cloned Republicans. In the absentee totals, he got 5% more. In early voting, he got 6% more. Election Day, he got 10% more. For the absentee and early voting and Election Day, again, the down-ticket Republican votes essentially reflect the Republican registration. So you've got these patterns from this electronic data. Let me tell you about the straight party option, the focus of my paper. And I have details in the handout. The straight party option comes first on the ballot, and I wanted you to see that. Voters check the party for which they want to vote throughout the ballot. A staff member in the Secretary of State's office suggested that inexperienced voters might have thought that this was a part of the ballot, that this part of the ballot asked them to indicate their party affiliation. He claimed that the straight party option included a vote for president. I'll tell you more. If voters selected a candidate from another party, then the vote that they thought was straight party was totally canceled, everything, and throughout the ballot. According to many voters' reports, the straight party choice did not register a vote for president. That was in many states, and they said it in New Mexico. However, the Republican straight party vote appeared automatically to register a vote for Bush. That is, it defaulted to Bush. Voters reported this default to Bush also appeared when they selected straight Democratic, straight Green, straight Libertarian, straight Constitutional Party. To override the automatic Bush vote, voters reported having to push the Kerry or Cobb or whomever button 2 to 10 times. Santa Fe, there was a said 10 times to get their preferred candidate. Now, throughout New Mexico, voters reported the Bush default occurred on other than Sequoia voting machines. And the voters also described this problem in states without the straight party option, and I'm going to try studying another one. I think that not all the voters were able to override the automatically selected incorrect choices, especially voters with little experience with electronic voting machines. Miscalibrations occurred with the straight party choice, or that's what they call them. When voters discussed the choice on election hotline comments, in an unusual comment, even two Republicans who voted straight party said that their vote showed for Kerry and other Democrats, and they had to override that automatic selection throughout the ballot. Voters described another problem. When they reviewed their selections before they entered their completed ballot, they found no vote for president. They had to go back and re-vote, and some thought that that vote may not have registered. The straight party option appears to have enabled Bush to receive much higher totals than the down-ticket Republicans. Republicans chose, and this data is on your handout, the straight party 35% in absentee, 42% in early election, and 24% early voting, and on Election Day, 24%. The Democrats chose it 46% on absentee, 51% in early voting, and 40% on Election Day. These totals of straight party do not appear on the Secretary of State's website. I got to count them because they were on the ballot, but you can't find this out. To clarify if and how the straight party influenced Bush's unusual totals, I subtracted the Republican straight party votes from the totals of Bush and the down-ticket Democrats, Republicans, and then the Democratic straight party votes from Kerry and the down-ticket Democrats. Bush got with the straight party totals removed, he got 36% more than the down-ticket Republicans in absentee. In early voting, he got 32% more, and on Election Day, 43% more. These numbers show that Bush collected extra votes far beyond the down-ticket Republican totals, even after subtracting the Republican straight party votes. After subtracting the Democratic straight party totals, Kerry got 6% more votes in the absentee totals. He got 6% less in the down-ticket Democrats, and on Election Day, 14% less. You remember Ohio is a straight party vote. In the scanner counted absentee and early voting, I suspect that Bush votes came from straight party option of third parties as well as from the Democrats. These vote transfers do not show up as undervotes. On the absentee ballot reports, I found 57 single votes for straight party option and third parties that did not register a vote for president. I've given you examples. But 22 did. In addition to Cobb, there were one or two candidates that were Green Party in Santa Fe, and you'd bet that if you were a Green Party, you wanted to vote for Cobb. And 39 of the 57 votes that didn't get a president for the third party were Green. In the early voting results, I found a similar pattern, where 17 straight party votes for third party presidential candidates registered correctly, 23 did not, and I gave you an example. Perhaps these votes were shifted to the Bush column by regular vote shifting formula in the software of the scanner in the early voting totals, because in the early voting totals, I found the same pattern I described to you on Election Day, where Kerry received fewer votes than the down ticket Democrats, and Bush received 6% more. The researcher Robert Plotner has found, in Republican precincts throughout New Mexico, like the five in Santa Fe where Bush won, none of these straight patterns, these strange patterns occurred, neither in absentee or early voting or on Election Day. To conclude, I suggest that the straight party, with its changeable functions, contributed to the unpredictable and statistically anomalous voting patterns that reduced Kerry's totals in Democratic precincts, counties, and states, and gave Bush the supposed plurality in the overall election. The 17 states with the straight party option included the major swing states. I gave you those on the map. The vote diminishing trap apparently built into the straight party option may also explain the discrepancies between the exit poll reports, where people thought they voted for their choice, and the official totals in many of the states with the straight party option.
Again, I've talked before a little bit. I'm a data analyst and statistician, and I've been a Common Cause member for a long time and concerned about fair elections and open government and all that kind of thing. And I've been following elections in Florida for various reasons for a long time. And I've noticed that the last two sets of presidential elections in Florida had a really inordinate amount of problems, and in fact, I would not call them real elections. The problems were just too much. I don't think there was any way to know who really won the elections, except that obviously in 2000, even the recount people by the consortium of media found that Gore obviously had gotten a lot more people who wanted to vote for him than Bush did in 2000. And I'll get into that later, but in any case, I have a website that documents all this. What I did was that I actually did two things, and this presentation is sort of a combination of them. The first thing I did was a statistical report where I looked at data from the 2000 election, which I had followed to start with, but I actually had some data by county for some of the big counties in Florida, by precinct. And I looked at the 2000 statistics on votes, and I also had the 2004 data on votes by county and in some cases by precinct. And I compared those, and I also looked at the registrations of by party between 2000 and 2004. And in my statistical analysis, I found a very strange pattern in the touchscreen counties. What I found was that consistently, that in most of those counties, the Democrats registered a lot more new Democrats between 2000 and 2004 than the Republicans did. And in some of those counties, the Republicans actually lost registered voters. And yet, there was a huge swing in the Republican direction on voting, which seemed pretty unusual and different than what happened in a lot of places. So that was the first thing I did, and that aroused my interest. And that being the case, I tried to figure out, well, what in the world is going on here, and where did those voters come from? The polls and the exit polls seemed to say that the new voters were favoring Kerry, and new Democrats who were newly registered Democrats, you would think that they're probably intending to vote Democrat, and yet there was a big swing from 2000 in the direction of Republican, and I thought that was kind of unusual. So I was aware of the election protection system, whereby on election day there was a hotline that there was a coalition of a large number of groups that are represented here today, as a matter of fact, verified voting and a lot of the computer-oriented type groups that are into the problems with electronic voting, and also groups that are interested in fair elections, and they formed a hotline for where voters could call in and report problems on election day. And what I did was I went through, and they have a huge database. In Florida had more irregularities reported than any other state, though Ohio also had a real lot, and we're pretty close to them. And Pennsylvania was also pretty close to them also. So those states had the most, I think. But I think New Mexico had quite a few for the size of their state also, and as did a lot of other states. Anyway, in Florida, I compile the reports of voters on election day as to what kind of irregularities and problems they had, and there were a lot of problems. One thing that I found was that they reported that the machines were switching votes from Kerry to Democratic candidates, from Kerry and other Democratic candidates to Bush and Republicans in the touchscreen counties. They would vote for Kerry. They would see the vote for Kerry. They would get down to the bottom of the thing and get ready to hit the button to send it in, and all of a sudden it changed. It changed on the review screen from Kerry to Bush. On the review screen, it was a delayed default from Kerry to Bush. And the same thing happened in a lot of cases in the Senate race between Castor and Martinez. Same thing. They get down to the bottom of the screen, get ready to hit the button. They see a delayed switch to Martinez. I think that probably a lot of people didn't notice that because they had seen that they punched the right button up there when they started. But in any case, even a fairly high percentage of people who even saw the problem, saw that on the review screen that the wrong person was now selected, they still could not override it. So some people, after being really persevering and calling in the poll workers to help them and so forth, some people were successful in overriding the switches, but a lot of people weren't, even the ones that tried. So there was a big problem with switching of the votes in the touchscreen counties. As I note there, dozens of precincts in Broward, Palm Beach, and Miami-Dade had reports of switching. And also there were reports in Hillsborough, Pinellas, Pasco, Sarasota, and Lee counties, which are also touchscreen counties. And I might also note that the IRS reports are pretty obviously a pretty small sample of what really happened. For one thing, the election protection people were getting reports that this was happening a lot, and also the poll workers were getting reports it was happening a lot. And if you look at a state like Maryland, for example, that had a 6% sample where they had a more detailed effort at looking at what kind of problems were occurring in 6% of the precincts in Maryland, they found about 40 times more problems of this nature than the election protection system did. The election protection people were considerably constrained by, for one thing, the Republican poll watchers and such from having access to talking to the voters or interacting with the voters. So they did have a system out there, but a lot of people didn't know about it, and there were a lot of people that didn't report. In any case, but it wasn't only switching. There were also a lot of glitches. And I've actually correlated in some individual precincts that a lot of the reported glitches, if you go in and look at that county, what you will see is a big number of undervotes. So in counties that were having these reported glitches, what I found was a high number of undervotes, people who didn't get their vote counted. And the poll workers also reported phantom votes, where in their precinct, the one they worked in, they noted that there were more, the machines counted more votes than what people voted, signed the voter logs. And I don't think anyone has followed up on that, but in any case, some of the poll workers in the election protection system on election day called in and said, hey, there's a problem. They counted more votes than we had voters. I'm sorry, how do I get back?
the back arrow there on the right side.
Okay. I see. Okay. Another big problem in Florida was manipulation by officials, poll workers, activists to restrict the minority vote. And this was a really big problem. It may have been an even bigger problem than the switching, though it's hard to know. In addition to the switching, also, it's really hard to know about whether or not, in addition to the switching, whether or not there was also tabulation problems. Because if you have electronic voting machines and you're counting by computer, it's very easy to manipulate the tabulators, as I mentioned in an earlier thing before, in addition to the fact that switching occurs. But in any case, there was a real lot of manipulation in the minority precincts in Florida counties. Like Ohio, they changed the election rules so provisionals don't count except in the official precinct where you're registered. And in a lot of these counties, there were extreme changes in the polling places of the locations of the places where minority voters were to vote and without notification. They had a voter card that said they voted in a certain precinct. They got there. They were told they were not on the list, that they can't vote. And not only that, but in a real lot of cases, many thousands, they weren't told the right place where they could vote. And a lot of them wandered around trying to find a place where they could vote. And some went to four or five precincts and never did find one where they could vote. And to me, this is really totally uncalled for, because any county can have a computerized voting list. There's no excuse, in my opinion, why a voter doesn't know the correct precinct to vote in. And if they come to the wrong one, they should be told what the correct one is, because it's a 5-second thing to go on your computer and find out what the correct precinct is for a voter. There was also like in 2000, it was in the news that there were huge purges of the voter rolls in Florida for things like supposedly felon violation, and when in fact most of the ones that were purged, they only shared a last name with a felon. They really weren't felons, and the majority were not. They were purged mostly because apparently they happened to be black, and the blacks tend to vote in a certain way. But there were a lot of other reasons for purges. They they also do updates of the voter rolls, and they purge inactive voters. Well, it's pretty obvious that the system for the purge of inactive voters is pretty erratic from one precinct to another, and it's pretty consistently more strenuous in some precincts than others. And a real lot of people were purged, and when they got to the polls, a lot of them been voting for 20 years in the same precinct. They get there and they're no longer on the roll, which is pretty strange. And so there were a lot of reports like that. There were also more restrictive requirements for ID in the minority precincts than in others. And there were also a lot of challenges and intimidation of the minority voters that took up time and made the lines longer. There were also, as some other people have talked about before, widespread, systematic, illegal, dirty tricks to make them to vote in the wrong place. There were letters, and I've got to go faster. there were letters and calls and all kinds of things. In any case, I've got a list here of all the different kinds of things. There was just multiple things that happened in the minority precincts to confuse them about where to vote. And there were also there were too few machines and long lines. And in those precincts, there was low official turnout, and yet they had long lines. And that's kind of strange. There were also big problems with, we're talking hundreds of thousands of problems with people who, there was registration fraud, for one thing, in Florida big time, with people actually getting their registration switched by signing on all the university campuses almost. There were dirty tricks going on regarding changing registrations without their approval. And there were many, many, many thousands of people who were unable to get, who found they weren't on the roll after they had signed a registration form and who didn't get absentee ballots when they'd requested. Using my statistical data, I was asked many times to come up with an estimate of how much the swing was. So I came up with a little simple method kind of looked at the data I've talked about before. And what I found was that in Broward County, had the biggest swing, and I estimated it was somewhere on the order of about 75,000. In Palm Beach, I estimated about 55,000. And I'll show you real quick sort of what I did to get these kind of numbers. But anyway, you get up in the 200,000 numbers for the touchscreen counties in terms of what looks like a swing that happened. This is the optical scan counties. The numbers are smaller here, but still substantial. And mostly due to suppression and those kinds of things, but maybe also some tabulation type things. But the kind of thing I did was that I noted that in terms of coming up with those estimates, I noted that in counties like Broward and Palm Beach, for that matter, and Broward County had 4.5 times more New Democrats registered than Republicans. And I had the data for 2000 and 2004. So I said, okay, well, a lot more New Democrats than Republicans. You would think that in 2004 it should at least be no worse than in 2000. So I just assumed that we would have the same percent vote for Democrat and Republican in 2004 as 2000. If I do that, depending on what kind of assumptions I make about suppression, which also obviously happened, I get some number between 48,000 and 112,000 as being what looks like a reasonable estimate of a swing, and I said it looks like to me maybe at least 75,000. And this is also taking into account that in these counties in 2000, we already know from the recount in 2001 that my starting point for the 2000 election was already a biased set, had a lot of problems that were known about. But in any case, this was Palm Beach. Palm Beach had eight times more New Democrats than Republicans, and yet they had a big swing to Republican. And other counties, similar way. So basically what I did was I assumed that, okay, a lot more New Democrats than Republicans in these counties, these Democratic counties, shouldn't be any worse in 2004 than 2000. If I get that, then I get these kind of numbers that I have in my table there. And in one county, I did different. Duval County didn't have the same pattern. And Duval County was a county, in my opinion, that was the worst problem in 2000. But in the recount by the consortium, what they actually found was that no matter how you count Chads and those kind of things, that wasn't very important, that no matter what you do about Chad, that Gore won by a good bit in Florida, no matter how you how you decide what your decision rationale is about Chads. Because just for example, the big problem was overvotes. And there were several counties that had what were called butterfly ballots, Duval, Palm Beach, Hillsborough. And what happened there was they actually had two pages where they could vote for president. They voted for Gore twice, a lot of them did. Those are legal votes in Florida because the voter's intent was clear. And yet, you may remember that they weren't allowed to look at the ballots and count them. We didn't have a recount. And so a lot of legal votes didn't get counted. And in fact, as many as 30,000 misvotes in Duval County, for example. Duval also had a lot of purges and a lot of voters who signed registration cards, including at the DMV, the motor voter program, who weren't on the rolls. So there was also suppression that was, some people estimated about 30,000 in Duval County, suppression in 2000. So basically, what I said was, okay, I looked at 2004, the suppression seems to be similar. They had a whole bunch of precincts with changed polling places. The voters didn't know where to vote. They weren't told where to vote. They actually had activists who were out there not only doing the dirty tricks to confuse them about which one to go to, but they were actually out there at the minority precincts taking down the signs so that when they went to the wrong precinct and then tried to find the other one, the signs were down. And this was done on a systematic basis. It happened in a lot of precincts. So these kind of things happen, you know, but it's obvious a swing happened in Duval. I chose a number, you know, based on looking at the numbers I'm looking at, but I had to do a different thing because I knew that the 2,000 base I started from was problematic to start with, and that was true in some other counties too. But this is the kind of thing I did in any case.
Hello, I'm Andrew Silva from...
And time out just a second. We seem to be having feedback on the mic. Is it a problem for you? Is the audience okay with it? We've picked up some feedback. Okay. Go ahead and
answer. Okay. I'm Andrew Silva from North Carolina. Bernie wanted David Allen, co-author with Biff Harris of Black Fox Voting, to come and speak. He lives in Highport, North Carolina. I apologize for David, who was unable to come because of other commitments, and I came instead. I offer you my sympathy for having to listen to me instead of David because he is an extremely entertaining talker. We have another good talker in North Carolina, Chuck Herron. His website's chuckherron.com. He's our irrepressible registered Republican, multiply certified ethical hacker. And he gave one of the best speeches I've heard at a rally in Raleigh for paper ballots last December. And I have a number of copies of his speech here in case anyone wants it. Just to get an idea, how many of you have heard of Carteret County, North Carolina? Okay, it's known. This is the most widely publicized mishap that, of many mishaps, I wouldn't even try to count them, that occurred in the 2004 election in North Carolina. It's not a case of election fraud or of a stolen election. It's a case of gross incompetence and machine failure, incompetence up and down the line. And my concern is less with the numbers and who got cheated, although some people certainly did get cheated, than who's responsible. I have a handout here, this one. It's a very concise column by Joyce McCloy, the coordinator of the North Carolina Coalition for Verified Voting. It's called North Carolina's Ballot to Blues. It's a very short, concise summary of the major mishaps. There are a lot of minor mishaps as well. On the back of it, that was printed in the News and Observer, the Raleigh News and Observer, the new state's newspaper of record. On the back is my follow-up letter to the editor assigning culpability for the mishaps across the state to the State Board of Elections for its either being crooked or grossly incompetent. Now, if you want to know more about the specific numbers, Eric Bonsleben is here, and he has more of that data with him. Eric, can you show yourself so you can talk to David if you want the specific, more specific data? I'm not going to give you a lot of numbers right now, except just to summarize what you already know about Carteret County. This Unilect voting machine used in early voting, DRE, which did not produce a paper ballot. Of course, none of the DREs in the states produce a paper ballot. Had a capacity of something under 7,000 votes on its drive. And the manufacturer, the vendor, Unilect, never notified the county officials that that was so. And so they had 10,000 people voted on it in early voting, and it only recorded 6,000 something of those votes. So their 4,400 votes were lost irretrievably. And because the State Commissioner of Agriculture raised that it was decided by just over 2,000 votes, it went back and forth from the General Assembly to the courts, the Assembly to decide, you know, who's going to decide how, who won this race, or what they're going to do, what kind of, they're going to spend $3 million for another statewide election just for County for Commissioner of Agriculture. Finally, the Democrat, who incumbent, who was the one who had lost by 2,000 something votes, conceded and sort of saved the skin of the Board of Elections, so they didn't have to. Otherwise, they wouldn't be impeached, but they certainly ought to have been impeached. And then there's another race that was decided by 9,000 something votes. The State Superintendent of Public Schools. And in this race, the Democrat was won, and the Republicans, that still hasn't been decided, because the Republicans, it's in the courts, because the Republicans are suing to discount provisional ballots that were not cast in the precinct of the voter. And I think you've heard a lot about this kind of thing already tonight, so I'll just leave that there. And I just have... I want to read some of my prepared remarks, not all of them. It'll take about another 6 minutes. And you can see this is a more political. I'm a more political than analytical person. And my concern is, what are we going to do about it? How are we going to stop all these election fiascos in North Carolina? And who's guilty of what's happened so far, and how do we get rid of them? So I'll just start. Identical bills were introduced in the two houses of the North Carolina General Assembly by Senator Ellie Kinnaird, she's my senator, and Representative Verla Insko of Chapel Hill. Thanks mainly to David Allen, the bill who was on the Joint Select Committee that had hearings leading to formulating the bills. The bills require that all computer code used in electronic voting systems be placed in escrow to be examined by independent experts agreed upon by the different political parties. The experts cannot reveal the code, but can publish their evaluations of it. The bill also requires that all DREs print a paper ballot that the voter sees and places in a ballot box. In my view, this does little good unless the ballots are counted, and they do not have to be before the official election results are announced. The requirement of audits of 3% of precincts certainly is not adequate to deter or detect fraud, especially not if fraud is an inside job, which electronic fraud is likely to be, and is likely to have been. Unfortunately, the bill also has a pernicious section that, in effect, is likely to lead many election officials to believe that they need DREs. I Googled for DREs. I found digital rectal exams, but these are direct recording electronic voting systems. It is a requirement that all votes, including early votes, can be identified by precinct. This provision was urged on the committee by Board of Election members, but the legislative members agreed with the view that the leadership of both parties would want it, absurdly for the same reason. So they would have the information needed to gerrymander districts in order to keep the other party out. The bills have a lot of support, but the word is that their chances of passage are poor, because despite the mutilation of the bills for the purpose of ingratiating them, the House and Senate leaders Democrats in both houses are opposed. Direct recording electronic voting systems have been used in North Carolina since 1988, but were used only in a few counties until the last two elections. In 2004, DREs of eight different brands were used in 41 of 100 counties. Six counties used punch cards, three lever machines, 48 optical scan, and three counties counted paper ballots by hand. A long list of irregularities and DRE breakdowns had occurred in North Carolina in recent years. You can see the list on www.ncvoter.net if you click on 1998 to 2003 news. Despite all the known difficulties with the machines, the State Board of Elections, with majority Democrats, has been blithely unconcerned. In North Carolina, the Secretary of State has no authority for the elections. It's the State Board. Asked by David Allen during a hearing whether the board had ever consulted a computer security expert about the machines, Gary Bartlett, director of the Board of Elections for most of these years, said that he had not. Mr. Bartlett also is on the board of directors of the Elections Center, and in his correspondence with Joyce McCloy, he has parroted the Elections Center line promoting paperless voting with flagrant distortion of facts and straw arguments, such as vote selling. I'm sure you've all heard these. From several angles, it appears that both Mr. Bartlett and the deputy director, Johnny McLean, as well as the SBOE legal counsel, Don Wright, are securely in the pocket of the major DRE vendors. If not, they certainly have been asleep at the switch while the problems with the paperless DREs have been festering and neglected for 16 years. Why Democratic state officials should be so soft on fraud and irregularities is a little puzzling, but they have been at their jobs a lot longer than has the Bush administration. Anyway, promotion of paperless voting systems in North Carolina is primarily the work of Democrats. Last year, I spoke by telephone with a salesman for AccuPoll who had attended a meeting of the North Carolina Board of Elections in March 2004 in order to request that the AccuPoll voting machines, which are manufactured in Charlotte, be certified for use in North Carolina. The salesman had been told by Johnny McLean that the Board of Elections would not certify AccuPoll. The initial reason given was that AccuPoll did not have a federal qualification number, but it did. And the salesman gave it to her. Ms. McLean left to confer with Gary Bartlett, then returned and stated that the board rejected AccuPoll's application because the DRE is certified to 1990, not 2002 standards. In fact, no voting technology has been certified to 2002 standards by that, had been certified to 2002 standards by that date. The board then announced that it was placing a moratorium on certification of new voting systems effective the next day, shutting the door specifically on further consideration of AccuPoll. North Carolina has the distinction of banning the only voting machine that prints a paper ballot that had federal certification at the time, while approving for North Carolina many paperless voting machines that have been shown previously to be insecure and unreliable. When asked during the committee hearings for an explanation of the rejection of the AccuPoll application, Mr. Bartlett repeated that it was because the product had been certified only to 1990 standards, and no one on the committee called him on this obvious lie. Thank you.
Okay, I got another signal from the videographer. It'll take him about a minute to change out. The last four speakers were going into sort of speed dating mode here, and since it's amazing to me, the later at night it gets, the more long-winded we all get. So. We-